live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a very unusual program, and I would suggest that if you have been impacted by vaccines or know someone who has, that you reach out and ask them to please contact the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, PRN.com, our sister station in the New York area, WBAI, to listen in, because we have a worldwide exclusive. A little bit from now, we're going to talk with Kevin Berry. Kevin Berry is the former federal attorney in civil law, currently co-president of the Elizabeth Burt Center for Autism Law and Advocacy and the president of First Freedoms, Inc., which is a nonprofit dedicated to advancing the freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution's First Amendment. And we're going to have the actual release of the CDC's Dr. William Thompson's transcripts and the revelations of what has been one of the major cover-ups of any area of medicine. You'll find out why this is so important a little later on, because up until now, this has been kept carefully under wraps because the pharmaceutical industry's enormous power in Congress. The American public has only gotten tiny bits and pieces and nothing that is hard-hitting enough, but only kind of the impression that something was wrong. Well, we're going to show you verbatim testimony of what was wrong, who was involved, name the names, and then ask for a federal independent investigation of all the people involved, clear up, including the head of the CDC and anyone else within the pharmaceutical industry that they were engaged with. So this is a powerful presentation coming at you, and it's a worldwide exclusive. This will make news tomorrow in some media. Certainly on the internet. So I suggest you put the word out now. But as we always do, we always open with the latest on health and healing and always cutting edge, always from major universities. For example, today, from the University of Queensland, I'll be sharing the latest on a new Alzheimer's treatment that has been shown to fully restore memory function. And it's based upon a technology. This was published in the Peer Review Journal of Science Translational Medicine, that is based upon oscillating vibrations. Well, I happen to know of a person in Tokyo who's done this even at a better level. So what they're doing and proving, which is great, they're not the only ones. And now I believe in the next 2 years, this will be the practice, standard practice. Also today, your arthritis medication, it could be causing you tuberculosis, sepsis, and herpes. And who's telling you this? This is from the American Arthritis Association. Also, anti-aging tricks from dietary supplements from Emory University. And we'll get into this in some depth. And also, from University of Cambridge in England, nutrition in the brain and cognitive decline, insights into epigenetics, and the power of apple polyphenols. I'm not at my regular mic. Hopefully, I'll be back at my microphone tomorrow. I'm on the road. I've just completed 4 weeks of helping people, three of actually engaging in a retreat, one in honoring the journey of healing for a nurse with some of her listeners, and then as a fundraiser for our sister station, WBAI in New York. Lives were changed. In fact, two people revealed themselves on the very last day, the very last moment before people left. They were board-certified physicians, wanted to see what this is all about. And as one of them said, I never in my life saw anything like this. I don't know how to explain it. I don't think I can. I don't know if it'll make a difference to my colleagues. It sure will to me and how I practice medicine. And one was one of America's most powerful, respected oncologist who also said, what I saw, I have no basis for explaining. I just don't know how to explain it. Well, I said to this person, life wasn't meant to be deconstructed and understood. It was meant to be lived. So at a certain point, we just have to be in that moment and understand the power of energy. So more on this on tomorrow's program. But we have a lot to share today, including a great deal on climate change. And I'm going to save a commentary on something that Gerald Salonta and I discussed over a month ago, where we predicted that their entire economies, that's plural. Remember, there's no one economy in America. You have at least seven different unique economies, and those that have gained their position by creating bubbles and then exploiting people's either greed, ignorance, or combination are bursting. The largest single 24-hour reduction in the value of the stock market occurred on Thursday, Friday. No time, not even during the Great Depression or since, have you had that big a decline, 950 points. Well, that's going to seem like chump change, I predict, of what you're going to see now, because the air is being laid out. It started in China. And I'll explain why, where everyone thinks the Chinese have lost it, just the opposite. I will explain in depth tomorrow why I believe this is going to benefit China tremendously, because by devaluing their currency again, probably 15 to 20%, what it will mean for them having an enormous amount of product that they can sell very cheaply on the world market, where we will not be able to compete with them, and also our mistakes in becoming a service industry from 1974 forward, and the destruction of 30 million jobs, the closing of over 60,000 factories, offshoring, so we are a service economy instead of a manufacturing economy, and hence we are backed by fiat make-believe money instead of an actual product, and how we're going to get hammered, and why I hope that people pay attention tomorrow, because it's a real education. And if some economists are in the audience, please listen in to see if this is in any way helpful to what you're seeing, because I believe that we're going to see something worse than the Great Depression approaching us in the next 6 weeks. But what's the silver lining? What can we do about it? I'll share that as well. I'm on a telephone today, so I have to apologize for not having the same technical quality as we normally would. Let's begin with Alzheimer's. I've been working with some people with Alzheimer's, and they come to see me when everything else has failed. That's when I see everybody. I'm not even in a bucket list, right? That bucket's been kicked into a grave someplace, and the people are just waiting to fall in. Their doctors say, nothing more we can do, sorry, go home, go to hospice care, and that's what they do. And then someone, a sister, a brother, a cousin, someone says, well, you know, I heard this guy, I don't know if he's for real or not, I don't know if it's all nonsense or not, but I keep hearing people occasionally on his show who talk about having some recoveries from autism, from Alzheimer's, from Parkinson's, from multiple sclerosis, from end-stage cancers, and we don't know what it's about. And then I get the call, and then I sit with him, and I see if there's anything in the that can help them. And imagine being trapped in a mine. And this is just from something from last week. Imagine you've been in a mine collapse. What do you want to see? You want to see a speck of light. Because where there's a speck of light, there's hope, there's air, and there's a possibility of rescue. Well, we saw some specks of light in a very advanced Alzheimer's case. A person should, and the family agreed, be institutionalized. But for the first time, this person was able, according to the daughter, quote, who's 47, you won't believe what happened today. My mom got up, went to the bathroom, took a shower, brushed her teeth. For 20 full minutes, she was fully conscious and cognitive. Then she goes back in to this state of disorientation, and I said, well, that's your speck of light. And it's something that you should Understand, one speck of life means that you can start the process of recreating, even if it's just tiny little change. And sometimes people don't realize with any form of neurological disorder, little tiny changes, and I mean little, you got to pay attention to. Don't look for some gigantic miracle overnight. That ain't going to happen. It took a long time to create the amyloid plaque in the brain, for neurons to be destroyed, for mitochondria, the energy factories of the brain, to be diminished and made worthless, for the dendrites to snap so the brain can't carry a signal from point A to point B, so it has to go around, and that's where the confusion, that's where a person will suddenly talk to a... Well, I actually saw someone talking to a fire extinguisher. I mean, then you think, how's that possible? What's wrong? Well, the circuitry. So whatever helps works. This is the latest from New Zealand, University of Queensland, published in a peer-reviewed journal. Quote, Australian researchers come up with a non-invasive ultrasound technology that cleans the brain of neurotoxic amyloid plaques, structures that are responsible for memory loss and the decline in cognitive function in Alzheimer's patients. In an Alzheimer's person, it's usually the result of a buildup of two types of lesions, amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. Amyloid plaques sit between the neurons and end up as dense clusters of beta amyloid molecules, a sticky type of protein that clumps together and forms plaques. The tangles are found inside the neurons of the brain, and they're caused by defective tau proteins that clump up into a thick and soluble mass. This causes tiny filaments called microtubules to get all twisted, which disrupts the transportation of essential materials such as nutrients and organelles along them. And so then it goes on to talk about the study, and what they're really using is just therapeutic ultrasound. That's a non-invasive, by the way. It's just a non-invasive beam. It's a sound wave into the brain tissue. And by oscillating super fast, these sound waves are able to gently open up the blood-brain barrier, which is a layer that this audience certainly knows that protects the brain against bacteria, and stimulate the brain's what are called microglial cells to activate. And the microglial cells are basically waste-removing cells, and so they're able to clear out the toxic beta-amyloid clumps that are responsible for the worst symptoms of Alzheimer's. So the team reports fully restoring the memory function of 75% of the mice they tested on with zero damage to the surrounding brain tissue. And they found that the treating mice displayed improved performance in three memory tasks, and that's good. Well, what if instead of attaching these directly to the brain, what if they attached them along the meridians? What if they attached the ultra, very gentle but specific waves to the 365 meridians, including those that are known to impact the circulatory system and the nervous system, and hence increase microcirculation to the nervous system? They haven't done that yet, and they're working on mice. But if anyone from the University of Queensland would like some additional input, instead of mice, real people making improvements, we'll be happy to help them and share some insights. Now, I remember the first debate, major debate, on arthritis I had was on WMCA radio, and it was with Barry Farber as the moderator, and I was taking the approach that foods and chemicals in foods and beverages could stimulate arthritis. And a person representing the American Arthritis Foundation, a neurologist, board-certified neurologist, said, nonsense. Quote, there is no association between anything a person would eat or not eat, drink or not drink, and arthritis. So determined were these true believers in the Orthodox model that there was no association between diet and disease outside of kwashiorkor or marasmus, extreme caloric restriction, that no doctors in the general mass of medicine, there were exceptions, but not the mass of doctors, believed that what you ate or what you drank made a difference. Well, now we have hundreds of papers published in the peer-reviewed journals showing just the opposite. This is the latest. Now, this I'm quoting from the American Arthritis Association. Quote, arthritis is a common problem in the United States, with the Center for Disease Control reporting that more than 52 million adults, nearly 300,000 children, living with some form of the disease. In fact, it is the number one cause of disability in the United States, limiting workability for approximately one-third of adults who have it. According to the Arthritis Foundation, arthritis costs Americans $156 billion every year in medical expenses and lost wages alone. Many people who live with the disease take arthritis medications to help alleviate the pain and avoid missing work or other obligations. Big Pharma, of course, is happy to oblige, having produced a wide variety of chemical cocktails that are promoted as remedies to arthritis pain and inflammation. One type of medication in particular, TNF, that's tumor necrosis factor, alpha blockers, are revered as wonder drugs for rheumatoid arthritis patients. Not surprisingly, however, these medications also carry serious risks that can lead to negative side effects, hospitalization, even death. The tumor necrosis factor inhibitors are an immunosuppressant given to the rheumatoid arthritis patients who experience the disease as an autoimmune condition. Since tumor necrosis factor plays a role in the immune system's natural defense system, the Food and Drug Administration approved these drugs for autoimmune treatment, which are sold in the United States under names like Humira and Embrel. However, any drug that disturbs the body's immune system puts a person at risk for potentially nasty side effects. In the case of rheumatoid arthritis, tumor necrosis factor inhibitory drugs, the risks are significant and include a long list of infectious disease. Candida, herpes, and tuberculosis are just some of the infections appearing that are recognized for these drugs. So, once again, the people who follow a healthy, clean, wholesome diet, stay away from all animal proteins, all refined sugars, are artificial sweeteners, caffeinated beverages. You're not putting pro-inflammatory chemicals in your body, especially if you're not eating deep fried foods and the French fries pizzas, which cause inflammation, which then trigger the need for some form of intervention. And unfortunately, the vast majority of people are using chemical interventions, and that is what leads to using something that could end up causing tuberculosis. So cleansing, juicing, detoxification, that will make a difference. And finally, the power of apple polyphenols. And by the way, every day I change the cleansing juices. One day it's lemon water in the morning and vegetables in the afternoon and then fruit pectins in the evening. And then the next day it's apples, organic apple juice, whole apple juice. Not from concentrate, and it has an enormous cleansing capacity. Well, this is the latest. Quote, spring green, golden, or red ruby apples have been treasured for centuries for the delicious taste. While the benefits of apples to human health is part of our common lore, most people can't tell you why. Beyond fiber and vitamin content and low glycemic index, apples' most significant benefits may well result from their polyphenol content. Polyphenols are plant compounds whose benefits are the subject of a good deal of research. Apple skin, in particular, is rich in several polyphenols, including a chemical which helps protect against glycation, the damaging cross-linkages between sugar and protein that aging human tissues endure. This polyphenol additionally maintains healthy blood sugar levels via the inhibition of an enzyme known as glucose-6-phosphatase, a chlorogenic acid, a compound that gives coffee some of its health benefits, is also present in apples. And the chlorogenic acid supports healthy glucose levels by inhibiting the enzyme glucose-6 phosphophytase in addition to other mechanisms. It also supports weight loss in those who are overweight. And visceral fat, the belly fat, was reduced in polyphenol supplanted diets. Also, polyphenols support longevity. And in fact, it can reduce diseases of all kinds and was shown to extend the lifespan of the roundworm, yeast, and fruit flies. The E. elegans, apple polyphenols, extended the average lifespan to an extent similar to resveratrol, compound found in red grapes and wine. These polyphenols appear to exert their benefit via their effect on sirtuins, a family of enzymes that are also affected by resveratrol. So, the takeaway message, they were right, an apple a day, but how about this? Why don't you try this? Why don't you take apples, peel them, organic apples, peel them, get the skins, and put the skin of four apples into a blender and use that with one tablespoon of flaxseed plus the handful of walnuts and the other nutrients that you put into your shake each morning and see if that doesn't make a big difference. That's our health and nutrition segment. Now, some from the environment. This is from an interesting short piece I read early this morning in the Daily Cause. It says, quote, abrupt climate change forced by 30-some-odd self-reinforcing feedback loops is making it possible to observe what was projected by the IPCC to occur by the end of this century. Now, you may have missed the news that there's a lot going on. Well, these methane releases are what Dr. Hansen warned as the clathrate gun, or in other words, the tipping points have tipped. A methane hydrate releases in the Arctic are warning us, and some are 150 miles across. By the way, that's a huge methane release, 150 miles across. Quote, you will remember that even slight releases of methane in the Arctic were enough to cause polar researchers like Jackson Box to freak out a little over a year ago. Methane is orders of magnitude worse than CO2 and is being released in 50 gigaton bursts that are themselves able to instantly create a 1.3 degrees Celsius global temperature rise. That's massive, by the way. And there's one more piece here. He says, a year ago we began to observe warmer Arctic water temperatures high enough to melt sea ice because of the methane releases. Sea surface temperatures as high as 18 degrees Celsius are now recorded at locations where warm water from the Pacific Ocean is threatening to invade the Arctic Ocean. That was all a year ago, but like many other people, I was still looking at the IPCC projections, which would be reasonably accurate if you cut the timescale in half. Now we have El Nino acting like a blowtorch, raising the temperature of the whole Pacific Ocean 4 to 8 degrees Celsius and directing its focus towards the West Coast. Fish can't adapt to temperatures rising that much, that fast, neither can the plant life that recycles our oxygen. We ourselves are running out of drinking water, even as the people making decisions for us have decided to irrigate our crops with fracking wastewater. Maybe it's a good thing peak oil is here because fossil fuel use has been part of the problem, and the changing over to solar and wind might have been good if we had done it in time. But methane releases are now on the order of 1,000 times more damaging even than all of the CO2 from cars. The result is California drought extending up into Canada and the Canadian fires, which may themselves be both releasing and fueled by a self-reinforcing methane release loop. In the Persian Gulf, we get heat indexes of 170-plus range. That's 170 degrees per day. The combination of desert heat, ocean humidity, and direct sunlight. So the takeaway message is we've tipped. Now, 7 years ago, I told you that we had 12 tipping points. Now it's been expanded to over 34, and every one of them have now tipped. So no longer can we stop anything from happening. What we can do is we can look at where we want to be when some of these events begin to have a reinforcing loop that impacts us directly. Living on the ocean, living in Lower Manhattan, living in Miami, living in Los Angeles, living in 12 different states in the United States, including states that are simply not habitable in the future. Not. You'd be lucky to have a lizard live in some of these places. Arizona, gone. Utah, Kansas, Colorado, Nevada, 80% of Texas, 90% of California, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Georgia, 80% of Florida, only southern Florida, and plus Alabama, and about 50% of Louisiana. Now, no one in any of those states is going to recommend anything be done or anyone pay attention to this because it would cause an exodus over a period of time. No one's going to rush. But in that period of time, the tax base that supports the community in the state would be diminished, and as a result, people would then no longer have confidence that what will government do if it doesn't have the money to support you on local services, roads and schools and hospitals and the things that we need in common. Now, there will always be green zones of affluence where they will have the resources they need, but even some of those are going to be in areas that are going to get creamed. It's inevitable, absolutely, positively inevitable, that the entire West Coast of the United States is going to have a devastating earthquake. And the last earthquake that occurred of that magnitude 300 years ago, according to Dr. Michio Kaku, who many of you have heard, he's on this network, the tsunami wave that came back was 600 feet high and devastated even Japan. And that originated right up near the Oregon-Washington-Canadian border area. So when will these happen? We don't know. But should we start at least being responsible and reasonable and seeing what are the best places to be in so we can make appropriate and timely choices? I'm not asking anyone to rush for the exit. That's irresponsible. I'm not talking about apocalyptic notions. That's not happening. I'm talking about if you're in two of the cities last week that hit 160 plus to 170 degrees, then that your time has come and has passed for making change. But unfortunately, those people are so poor and their governments are so incompetent or corrupt, they're not going to be helped. But we have the choices now. Oh, and by the way, one more reason to boycott Nestle's is because they paid $524. That's not a huge amount to a $100 billion company. But what did they get for $524? They got 27 million gallons of California drinking water. Let me repeat that. California's Nestle's paid $524 and then extracted 27 million gallons of water out of California. And that's, you think you could shame a company like this? They don't care. They're indifferent. Profit is what they cared about. Quote from Claire Burnish, Nestle has somehow managed the most sweetheart of deals from its Arrowhead 100% mountain spring water, which is ostensibly sourced from Arrowhead Springs and which also happens to be located on public land in a national forest. The company drew 27 million gallons of water from 12 springs in Strawberry Canyon from the brand, apparently by employing rather impressive methods, considering the permit expired in 1988. But as Nestle's will tell you, that really isn't cause for concern since it swears it is a good steward of the land, and after all, that expired permit annual fee has been diligently and faithfully paid in full $524 for it. And that isn't the only water it collects. Another 51 million gallons of groundwater were drawn from the area by Nestle the same year. And there's another site the company drains for profit while California's historic drought rages on, Deer Canyon. Last year, Nestle drew 76 million gallons of the springs in that area, which is a sizable increase over the year before. So while all the people listening right now from California, where you're being told to cut back, and you should, and that's responsible, Nestle's, they're cutting nothing back. And that is irresponsible. I'm Gary Knoll. Now, we're going to go to our guest in 5 minutes, but before we go to our guest, I want to share something with you from Bernie Sanders, where he laid down a real scorching challenge to then Alan Greenspan, head of the Federal Reserve. This is 5 years before the recession, 5 years. So Sanders challenged him. Listen to what he said. Mind you, this is in early 2002, and he was prophetic, and he was right on, and he was the only one in Congress that dared challenge the godlike creature we call Alan Greenspan.
Greenspan, nice to see you again. Mr. Greenspan, I have long been concerned that you are way out of touch with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations. And I must tell you that your testimony today only confirms all of my suspicions. And I urge you, and I mean this seriously, because you're an honest person. I think you just don't know what's going on in the real world. And I would urge you, come with me to Vermont. Meet real people. The country clubs and the cocktail parties are not real America. The millionaires and billionaires are the exception to the rule. You talk about an improving economy while we have lost 3 million private sector jobs in the last 2 years. Long-term unemployment has more than tripled. Unemployment is higher than it has been since 1994. We have a $4 trillion national debt. 1.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Millions of seniors can't afford prescription drugs. Middle-class families can't send their kids to college because they don't have the money to do that. Bankruptcy cases have increased by a record-breaking 23%. Business investment is at its lowest level in more than 50 years. CEOs make more than 500 times of what their workers make. The middle class is shrinking. We have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation, and this is an economy that is improving. I hate to see what would happen if our economy was sinking. Now, today, you may not have known this. I suspect that you don't, but you have insulted tens of millions of American workers. You have defended over the years, among other things, the abolition of the minimum wage, one of your policies, and giving huge tax breaks to billionaires. But today you reached a new low, I think, by suggesting that manufacturing in America doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the product is produced. We lost 2 million manufacturing jobs in the last 2 years alone, 10% of our workforce. Walmart has replaced General Motors as the major employer in America, paying people starvation wages rather than living wages, and all of that does not matter to you. Doesn't matter if it's produced in China, where workers are making 30 cents an hour, or produced in Vermont, where workers can make 20 bucks an hour. It doesn't matter. You have told the American people that you support a trade policy which is selling them out, only working for the CEOs who can take out plants to China, Mexico, and India. You insulted Mr. Castle. Mr. Castle, a few moments ago, a good Republican, told you that we're seeing not only the decline of manufacturing jobs, but white-collar information technology jobs. Forrester Research says that over the next 15 years, 3.3 million U.S. service industry jobs and 130 $6 billion in wages will move offshore to India, Russia, China, and the Philippines. Does any of this matter to you? Do you give one whit of concern to the middle class and working families of this country? That's my question.
Congressman, we have the highest standard of living in the world.
No, we do not. You go to Scandinavia and you will find that people have a much higher standard of living in terms
for
of education, health care, and decent paying jobs. Wrong, Mr. Greenspan.
May I answer your question?
You sure may.
Thank you. For a major industrial country, we have created the most advanced technologies, the highest standard of living for a country of our size. Our economic growth is crucial to us. The incomes, the purchasing power of our employees, our workers, our people, are by far more important than what it is we produce. I submit to you that, may I? And what I'm saying to you is, yes, I found a flaw. I don't know how significant or permanent it is, but I've been very distressed by that fact. But if I may I just finish an answer to the question previously?
You found a flaw in reality?
A flaw in the model that I perceived is the critical functioning structure that defines how the world works, so to speak.
In other words, you found that your view of the world, your ideology, was not right. It was not working.
Precisely. No, that's precisely the reason I was shocked, because I had been going for 40 years or more with very considerable evidence that it was working exceptionally well.
Well, that was Bernie Sanders challenging Alan Greenspan. Wouldn't it be nice if we had individuals with that level of integrity standing up for the citizens' rights against those who stand up for just corporate rights? So good for you, Bernie Sanders, on that issue. On other issues, we share a difference of opinion. Your support for the military-industrial complex, your support for the Patriot Act, your support for other things, we'll get to that. But when you do a good job, I commend you on it, absolutely. Let's say hello to Kevin Berry. I gave you his background earlier. He is a former federal attorney in civil law, currently the co-president of the Elizabeth Burt Center for Autism Law. And his website is ebcala.org. And it's nice to have you with us today, Kevin.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
Kevin, I think people should be not just disturbed by what you're going to share with us, but I believe that we should pull out all the stops to try to get the people involved to be held accountable for what I personally believe is a crime against humanity, where decisions were intentionally made with malice aforethought to obscure, to hide, or in some way to alter information on the truth about the relationship between vaccines and autism. I would like for you to take your time. I will not interrupt you. I want you to lay out what the transcripts that you have transcribed from a Dr. William Thompson and a Dr. Brian Hooker, they were Thompson's conversation with Hooker. Hooker then recorded it. You're transcribing it. What they say, what did they say that should be concerned to all of us, especially those parents who were told by their pediatricians or the CDC or someone else, there's nothing wrong with that vaccine. It couldn't have caused your child's problems, and what they knew at the CDC. So give us the names, the dates, the specific quotes by Dr. Thompson that shows what we didn't know until right now, and you're sharing it with us. The forum is yours.
Okay, thank you. It's a pretty complicated story, but it comes down to corruption at the highest levels of the CDC on vaccine safety. I think like in the 90s, where they saw the autism rate climbing very steeply, very quickly, they had a bunch of meetings at the FDA. They calculated how much mercury kids were getting, and it seems like what you can feel from the transcripts is that they started with an approach, not thinking they were going to find anything, but then they kept finding signals showed an association between the number and amount of vaccines and the age given, that showed an association between thimerosal and a mercury-based preservative in vaccines and autism. So then what they systematically did was, and this is the CDC, they systematically found ways to adjust the statistics to make the signal go away. And that's what Dr. Thompson is admitting to in his conversations with Dr. Hooker. And he says some pretty amazing things. For example, he says that the CDC set the research back 10 years. And what he's talking about specifically there is he published a paper, he was a co-author on MMR and autism, and he says that they omitted statistically significant data, which showed an elevated risk for autism in African American males. It was in a pilot study in Atlanta, and that the CDC destroyed data, but he kept records of it, and he's now turned those records over to Congressman Posey, and they're trying to. And Dr. Thompson says he wants to be subpoenaed. He wants to be compelled to testify under oath about what happened. And what we're seeking right now is a committee chairman in the House or the Senate, or chairperson in the House or the Senate, to convene hearings. And because it's the third rail of public health and no one wants to touch the issue of vaccine safety, no committee chairman has stepped forward yet to hold those hearings. Some other things that Dr. Thompson says that are startling is that he says that he's basically stopped lying. He says that he's seen his superiors at the CDC do unethical, vile things, and no one holds them accountable. He says that it's disturbing at every level. And from a parent's perspective and a pediatrician's perspective, this is, as you were saying, it's criminal, because I have three children, so I vaccinated three children based on bad information. So from a pediatrician's perspective, they're seeing dozens and dozens and dozens of kids each week, and they're also relying on the CDC to be honest about vaccine safety, and they haven't been. And the one other big takeaway is that the CDC says that their research exonerated the entire vaccine program. In reality, they only ever looked at one vaccine, the MMR vaccine, and one component of vaccines, thimerosal. Dr. William Thompson is a co-author on both MMR vaccine, the only one ever studied, and thimerosal, the only one ever studied. And he says they committed fraud on the MMR study that he was part of. And he says that even though he's an author of a paper that says thimerosal, that exonerates thimerosal safety, he says he would never give it to a pregnant woman, and he would never give it to his wife. And that's the last person who should get a mercury, shot-containing mercury. So it is startling. It's hard to read. My son is 17. He regressed between age 1 and 2 and got an autism diagnosis at 2. So it's hard for me to read this and know that these people had the ability, if they had put the honest research out, the research of the last 10 years could have gone in a more productive, it's almost like they dammed the river and the river went a different direction. It went to all genetics research because that was safe.
What about the people at the CDC claiming that the rise in autism, where it was before all these mass vaccinations, now it's 1 in 68 children and 1 in 48 boys, that's all genetic and has nothing to do with the vaccines?
Well, that's impossible, but that's a storyline the CDC's been pushing for a long time, and now they're also pushing that it's all prenatal. They're trying to send the message that there's nothing a parent can do with a living child that would alter the outcome, that an autism diagnosis is predetermined, and tens of thousands of parents across the country in every state, every race, north, south, east, west, everywhere, are reporting that they watch their children regress into autism after vaccination. And for anyone who wants to see video proof of all this, there's go to a hashtag hear this well, the word hear and this well. Go on Twitter, there's sort of a YouTube channel, and you'll watch a whole bunch of 1-year-olds who are engaged and a whole 2-year-olds who are lost. And something happened to them. Something happened in the environment to them
It's not genetics. You know, 100 years, people never missed that a two-year-old couldn't talk. 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, people would report that. If a kid's talking at one and not at two, that's not something a parent misses.
Kevin,
ever.
As a federal, former federal attorney, and as a civil law expert, do you see anything that makes them culpable so that any form of class action lawsuit by the parents against them directly for engaging in a conspiracy to cover up information they did not want the public to see, are they capable of being sued or held accountable legally?
That's hard to say. I'd say without a presidential mandate, without presidential will to look into this, that'll never happen. But if there were hearings, this would be, I think, the best possible approach. If there were hearings on this, we need to hear more from Dr. Thompson. We need to hear more from his colleagues. And we need to hear from them under oath. If they just go to Congress and they're not sworn in and they're not subpoenaed, they just lie through their teeth like they've been doing for 15 years, and they'll continue doing that with no repercussions.
Well, we have one of Dr. Thompson's superiors who was also co-author on the article and who engaged in telling Congress a different story. We have a clip of that. I'd like for you to listen to the clip of what this woman said before the Senator or Congressman Burton's committee when he was investigating this, and you give us your feedback on this, all right?
Sure.
This is Colleen Boyle from the CDC. Listen to this exchange, please.
Assessor, Congressman Weldon was a well-respected, competent medical doctor, and a great deal of esoteric expertise on this subject that I'll probably never have. But I gleaned from him some certainty that he felt the aerosol in vaccinations definitely was a contributing factor to autism. And I read not very long ago an article that it said until the wonderful people like us introduced vaccinations to Africa, the African children basically were autism-free. They never heard of autism, never had a case of Down. Are you familiar with that? Have you ever heard that before?
Okay. Yes.
I wonder if the CDC has conducted or facilitated a study comparing vaccinated children with unvaccinated children yet. Have you done that?
I don't think the CDC has, but I also think the CDC at this
stage. We have actually done a number of studies looking at the relationship between thimerosal vaccines and autism and other developmental disabilities. And there have been over the last decade, there have been numerous studies looking at the relationship between vaccines and aspects.
That the CDC conducted?
Some of them were conducted by the CDC. Others were conducted by
How many would you say? Would you estimate?
I would actually have to check with the specific numbers, but I know there were two. One large study looking at various neurodevelopmental disorders, and the second one that focused specifically on autism. And those were fairly recent studies.
Would you see that my office gets a copy of those, please?
Of course.
Do you believe additional study will provide useful data in assessing the safety of childhood vaccines?
The IOM has evaluated this issue back in 2004 and again most recently in 2011. And, you know, their conclusion, again, it was not just looking at the work that was done at CDC, but with a total body of evidence, was suggesting that vaccines and their components did not increase the risk for autism.
My time is very limited here. So clearly, definitely, unequivocally, you have studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
We have not studied vaccinated versus unvaccinated.
Stop there. That was the meaning of my question. You wasted 2 minutes of my time. What steps has the CDC undertaken to ensure the integrity of the research that was performed by Dr. Thorson, who, as you know, has been indicted for misconduct and misallocation of resources?
So Dr. Thorson, who was a co-investigator on a couple of studies that came out on autism, was really just one investigator. And that body of evidence related to vaccines and autism.
All right. Have you gone back to validate the variety of studies he participated in? I mean, you know this guy is a humongous scumbag, one of the most wanted men on earth, and you relied upon him for data to determine whether thimerosal had a negative effect?
So two studies don't conclude a body of work. The body of work that's relating vaccines to autism is a large collection of studies.
I know, but you told me you only had two studies relating to vaccines, vaccinated and unvaccinated, so you must figure two studies must have some weight. Running out of time quickly here, you mentioned that you only have thimerosal and multivial. Why is that?
I was actually going to get that information for the committee.
Okay. Because
okay.
I would think
now,
they only
have let's go back to you. Give us your insight on this, Kevin, because this is one of the people whose name was on one of the articles that is in question that showed a 300-plus percentage increase in African-American boys under 36 months of age who develop autistic spectrum, and that's what Thompson and others engaged in hiding. They changed the material, substantively changed it, and then tried to destroy the evidence. Is any of that related into the transcripts?
Yeah, it is. And it's all very disturbing. The thing that jumps out in the transcript is the pattern of corruption inside. It's a culture of corruption inside the CDC. When they find data they don't like, then they game the data, they rig it to get the result they want. And in the case of the MMR paper that Boyle was part of and that Thompson was part of, what they did is they added a criteria after the fact about the children needing a valid Georgia birth certificate in order to be in the cohort. And by adding that criteria after the fact, it lowered the ratio, so it eliminated the risk signal. So, but then they did similar things in the Denmark studies, and Thorsen was mentioned in that piece. And Thorsen is indicted in 2011 in Atlanta for embezzling $1 million from the CDC. The entire concept of using Danish registries filed by the CDC to exonerate the U.S. vaccine program, Paul Thorsen brought that to the CDC in the year 2000, and it was advanced inside the CDC by Dr. Marshall and Jürgen Alsop, who is, we have the emails from that, from Freedom of Information requests, and they did that, and she's another co-author on the Thompson MMR paper. And it's very disturbing. I think in 100 years, the scholar is going to be looking back at this and trying to figure out how they got away with this for so long. And it's basically from 1999 to 2000 until now, but it's about the same 15, 20 people. Like keep seeing the same people. You keep seeing Tommy Boyle, Frank DiStefano. So when you see Marshall and Jürgen Alsop.
Could you name some of the people who are listed in the transcripts by Thompson saying these were people who were involved in the cover-up or malfeasance or corruption at some level?
That's what he seems to be indicating, yes. But again, this is what we have on a recorded phone call. Like, this is not under oath. This is not testimony. That's why we need hearings. What he says is extremely disturbing. But also, let me just talk one other point, just from a parental perspective on this. What all this started, the Institute of Medicine report in 2004. What they were told, and we have this on Freedom of Information Act request information also, that they were told that the CDC wanted to find vaccines safe and effective, and here's the important phrase, on a population basis. Now, that's where the bait and switch is in the vaccine program. When the vaccines are going out, they're sold as safe and effective. If your child or an adult is injured by a vaccine, did we say something safe and effective? We meant unavoidably unsafe. That's why vaccines have a liability protection. They have liability protection because as a product class, they are considered unavoidably unsafe. So vaccines are unavoidably unsafe for an individual, and they are safe and effective, ... on a population basis. So that's what all the CDC research that purports to be vaccine safety, they don't look at individual people. They don't touch children. They just
okay.
They look at
I've got two. I've got two final questions before the end of the hour here. I want to get in. One, based upon what you have transcribed and what you, as a scholar in law, have observed, do you believe that Dr. Andrew Wakefield has been exonerated had these people published an accurate study on the topic? Would he have been excoriated and destroyed his reputation by Brian Deer and the British medical community had the truth come out of the CDC about vaccines and autism?
Oh, absolutely. That's actually at the very tail end of the book. So it's extraordinary text messages from Dr. Thompson to Andy Wakefield and to his Andy Wakefield's wife, Carmel, where the text read something like, "I'm sorry for the price you paid for my dishonesty." And he also sent a message saying that his scientific, that Andy Wakefield's scientific opinion would have been validated if they hadn't altered the data. So it's enormous. And
all right.
One other thing, Gary.
Secondly, why can't you? Why can't
time,
you?
But we need
okay,
the president on this. We need a presidential election.
One other. Why don't you start to get the all of the different injured children in America, their parents, to come together to Washington D.C. and protest outside of the CDC headquarters and hold banners up showing the photographs of the people, their title within the agency, and the quotes from the transcript, and then hand that out, stand outside of Congress, have every member of Congress that comes out, every legislator, every senator, every representative, given a copy saying, here is what your CDC that you fund and you oversee through your committees, that is, you've allowed these people to get away with this. That why don't they? And then I would go to the White House and do the same thing and demand the President of the United States have a special prosecutor to see if these people shouldn't be held accountable of crimes against humanity. That's a suggestion for you. And also, I would take this story, now that you have the transcripts, I would take it to 60 Minutes, 2020, Dateline, to get this further into the public consciousness.
I think that's a great idea. And I think that those plans are underway. We're going down with the Nation of Islam, the Million Man March in October. You know, they've picked up this issue. They're aware of what's happened with the African American males. And again, I don't think that there's so much of a racial component on this. I think it was just corruption. No matter what the signal would have been, they would have buried it. But that happens to be the signal they buried. Because if they'd gone forward with the honest research results, that would have led to more research. It's like, hey, we have a signal, let's pursue it and see if this is real. And instead, they did not want to pursue it because they were afraid of what they might find. And that's why Dr. Thompson says that the CDC has set the research 10 years behind, and that he's coming forward now. It seems like it's a bout of conscience, and good for him. You know, I've never met Dr. Thompson, but I'd like to shake his hand for coming forward. And just one other thing you're talking about with 60 Minutes, in addition to the influence of the pharmaceutical industry on mainstream media, this is what Obama's HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius was quoted as saying in March 2010, when she was asked a question by Reader's Digest, what can be done about public mistrust of vaccines? And President Obama's cabinet secretary, and cabinet secretaries don't freelance. They talk if what she's saying is not the president's policy, you know, she would have been rebuked and they would have fixed it. She says, there are groups out there that insist that vaccines are responsible for a variety of problems despite all scientific evidence to the contrary. We have reached out to media outlets to try to get them to not give the views of these people equal weight in their reporting to what science has shown and continues to show about the safety of vaccines. So there is a censorship policy in place, apparently, by the Obama administration. So you've been great on covering this issue over the years, but will 60 Minutes touch it? Doubtful. Well, most of the network news, most of the print advertising. Bobby Kennedy was very eloquent talking about he's friends with some of the network executives, and they said that non-election years, 70% of their advertising revenue for pharmaceutical companies. So do they want to?
Kevin, what
their
we'll
best
do is
customer?
This: a week from Tuesday, we will devote an entire hour on our Progressive Commentary Hour to invite you back and ask some of the other people involved, Brian Hooker, and some of the people involved in the movement to spend an hour and share the larger story. I thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for transcribing the statement so at least we know where our search began. All the best.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm Gary Nall. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. That was Kevin Berry from New York City, and we will continue with this story.
Have a nice day.